Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Candidate Forum at the beautiful new Lemon Grove Library.
Helix Water is a large district. It's been around since the 1880s. They have 56,000 customers with water meters and about 700 miles of pipeline to maintain. Tonight, we have candidates here from Divisions 1 and Division 3. Now, Division 3 is the Lemon Grove. How many of you here live in Lemon Grove? Okay, a lot of you. Lemon Grove has three candidates running. Tonight, we have one of them here, and that is Mark Grasick.
Thank you.
Chuck Muse, the incumbent, is traveling out of the country, and the other candidate in that race is Eric Collins. He's a finance manager, and he informed us that he has a scheduling conflict. The other seat is District 1. That includes much of La Mesa and El Cajon. The four candidates who are running in District 1 are the incumbent, John Linden, who's here tonight, Dan McMillan, Lou Tejeda, both here tonight, and also Aaron Zajac, who did RSVP that he was coming but isn't here. So without further ado, let's move to opening statements. Each candidate will have 2 minutes. Mark, let's start with you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming out tonight. My name's Mark Grasick, and I'm running for Division Number 3, like Miriam said. That's part of La Mesa, a big chunk of Spring Valley, but all of Lemon Grove. And I'm running to be your representative here from Lemon Grove. My wife and I have lived here in Lemon Grove since 1992 for over 24 years. We're homeowners. We raised our kids here. They attended our local schools. I'm an Army veteran and a San Diego State graduate. I've got over 20 years of experience in the landscape, irrigation, and water industry. And currently, I'm the reclaimed water site supervisor and manager and irrigation manager at MCIS Miramar. So why am I running, you ask? Well, I'm a ratepayer, just like you, you know, and every time the Helix Water Board raises their rates like that, that has an impact on our household budget, just like it does on yours. And I'm running specifically for that reason, because I've been affected just like you have. And back in October of 2015, I was at that meeting when over 200 of us attended and wanted to have our voices heard. And that night, we were there till almost 11 o'clock when the board voted 3-2 to raise our rates for a 5-year rate increase. And everyone left that night. You know, the police were called. Everyone left that night angry and frustrated. And people were wondering, okay, what are we going to do? People were standing outside there. Well, that's the night when I decided that I was going to run for this seat. And since that time, I've been out listening to you, the ratepayers, and I share your same concerns and frustrations. Once again, Mark Grasick from Lemon Grove for Division 3. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mark. John Linden, let's hear from you.
Thank you, Miriam. I'm in Division 1, which is El Cajon and part of La Mesa. But since that's who votes for me, but since we represent all the people in the Helix Water District, I thought it was important I be here. And I've been on the board for over 10 years, and representing the district. And Helix Water District is probably one of the best-run agencies in California. Of 411 water agencies, Helix is the 19th largest. We have an infrastructure of $1.5 billion. We have to keep that maintained. So the reason for the water increase rate, and incidentally, 9 water agencies in San Diego County use that, and they have. And Dan was on the Padre Dam, and they passed that about 10 years ago or more, and there was just an article as to the effectiveness of that through Padre Dam. We save about $100,000 by doing that, but we revisit every year. We revisit, and if the estimates are higher than we set up, then we have to go back into the 218 and have a regular public meeting. But otherwise, if it stays under that, we continue for the next 4 years. So it's a very effective cost-effective way to set the water rates. It's that simple.
So okay.
My family, I was raised here in El Cajon on a ranch, a poultry and agriculture ranch. So we had wells and we respected water. And today we're all respecting water. And I thank you for the conservation you've done, because we use 91 gallons per person per day. Okay. The average in San Diego County is 140 gallons. In 91, it was 175 gallons. So we're doing a good job. Thank you.
There you go. Next, let's hear from Dan McMillan.
Thank you, Mary. Yeah, as I'm running against John, I've known him for many years. I served for 12 years on the Padre Dam Water District. I have moved since then. I am now in the Helix District. I do like the water industry, and I do like helping set public policy so it's favorable to the constituents. My background is when I graduated from San Diego State, I was commissioned. I was in the Marine Corps for 3 years. I came back, went to graduate school as a math major. I was in the defense industry for about 6 or 7 years. During that time, I received an MBA in finance, and then I went out, and since then, I've been the president of a construction and realty company. We've had many projects, both on the construction side and the sales side, so I feel very well-versed in the finance side. I think boards, 90% of their duties are in the finance area. Many people will feel they're in different areas, but finance controls things. As a member of the Water Authority, I did vote for the Carlsbad desal plant, the lining of many of the canals in Imperial Valley. We paid for the lining, and then we get the water that is no longer wasted or goes to seepage. As John mentioned, Helix is a good district. I just think it can be better with lower rates. We have to remember that Helix and all water districts are enterprise districts, and their rates end up covering their costs. So the only way you can hold rates down is to cut costs. And you'll see on my signs, it says it's that simple. Lower costs equal lower rates. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Tejeda.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to address you, fine folks here from Lemon Grove. Give you a little background on myself. I'm the current president for one of the larger competitive soccer leagues based in East County. I'm also president of the board for Park and Recs for City of El Cajon. But I'm a retired employee of the Helix Water District, so I bring a unique set of skills to this position. I'm the only person running for this position who's not held public office before, so I bring a unique and different approach. One of the biggest issues that we have is maintaining our water rates. I was in the position to be able to see the stuff going on inside. I brought stuff to the attention of the current board members, including Mr. Linden, some of the stuff that was going on, for example, overpaying on projects, paying for work that wasn't done on construction projects. How can you justify that? And that was brought forth to the attention of Mr. Linden and the rest of the board, and they just kind of swept it under the carpet. Once again, that was a 3-2 vote, and I was at that meeting with Mark that night as well. I've been a ratepayer for 30 years, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. You look at what our annual budget is for that district. Mr. Linden and the rest of the board voted to sell a piece of property down the El Minor River Basin, 500 acres. You know, they sold it for $9 million. Shoot, that sounds like a good deal, right? No, not when you look at it. They had in their hands a study from Sandag that had identified that area as an area with a large sand deposit with construction-grade sand. The value of that sand is somewhere between $250 and $300 million, and they sold it for $9 million. I went in there and gave a presentation as an employee. I committed what's known as professional suicide. I went in and gave a presentation against that as an employee. You can imagine what happened to me after that, but I felt strongly enough about it that I brought it to their attention. And trust me, there's still some of the public agencies are still looking into it. It's not a done issue. That's the stuff that I want to bring forward to make sure that those things are rectified and clarified and corrected so it doesn't go on. And all that stuff impacts our water rates. All that stuff is passed on to you and me. I mean, I don't know about you going to the grocery store. I want to get what I pay for. I don't want to pay for something that I didn't get.
Thank you. We're going to give Mr. Linden 1 minute of rebuttal.
That was surplus property. We're in the water business. We're not in the real estate business. As a state agency, we have to jump through loops of regulations on how we sell property, okay? We have to offer it to all government agencies first. If that doesn't happen, then we get bids on it, but it's a procedure. We just don't nilly-nilly go out there and set a price. It's all controlled under the state laws, okay? We're not in the water business. We had to get rid of it. It was very expensive to maintain it. And this is a 30-year program, and we don't even know how much the county will allow to be taken out of there. It's not our business. So that's the response to...
Can I get a rebuttal on that?
Okay.
I asked them at that meeting that night if they'd got an appraisal on it, and they said yes. They appraised it for farmland. When I asked them, that's not the correct procedure. As a former senior right-of-way agent, I know what the procedure is. They need to get an appraisal done for its highest and best use. And its highest and best use is for a sand mining operation, not for farmland. And that's what they had it appraised as. And it was an excess land. What happened was they got into litigation because of some mistakes that were made by management. And to get out of it, that's what they had to do. They had to use that property as part of the settlement agreement. Because one of the things that I asked, could that be construed as gifting of public funds? That's our property. We as ratepayers own that.
Okay.
And they sold it for nothing. So that's the kind of stuff that I want to bring forward to make sure that everybody knows what's really going on in there.
The current board majority has voted repeatedly to raise water rates, most recently voting for a 5-year rate hike, including over 10% for the next year. And that's despite ratepayers conserving water as asked. Of course, their water costs have gone up and some other things, but this has been on the minds of many of the ratepayers. I'd like to ask Director Linden to please explain your reasons for voting for these rate hikes and if you see any relief in sight. And for the challengers, if you are elected, would you work to reduce rates? And if the answer is yes, please be very specific in how you would do that. If you say you're going to cut, what would you cut? Or what new revenues would you come up with to be able to afford cutting the rates? John, let's start with you on this one.
Okay, thank you for that question. Here's how it works. We have a $1.5 billion infrastructure. We went to the staff and said, we want to keep the water rates as low as possible. So bring back to us what is practical on a low priority basis to put on hold. They came back to us and said, we can delay about $5 to $6 million worth of projects. And that's what we did. We cut that as much as we could. But here's the problem. Rainbow Water District in North County, their board never took a rate increase. And what happened? The outfit ran apart. The state of California had to come in and bail them out because their infrastructure had fallen apart. We're not going to let that happen at Helix. You deserve better than that. We're a very proactive, professional organization. And I'll stand here any day of the week and defend exactly what we do, and is to your benefit, because we're elected by you to represent you. But in representing you, we want to be sure that when you turn the faucet on, there's water coming out. That's the reason right there. And our obligation is to do that. And we're doing it, folks. And unfortunately, I have to be honest with you, our water rates are one of the lowest in the county. Otay and Helix, I mean, Otay and Padre Dam rates are higher than ours, and they always have been. That's my case.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. McMillan, you're next.
Oh, thank you. I was endorsed by the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association and Democrats and Republicans. And one of the reasons the Improvement District has endorsed me is because I understand that you have to cut the costs to cut the rates. This is an enterprise district. In other words, a non-enterprise district such as your schools or your city, they have a certain amount of money they bring in, and that's what they can spend. And so their hands are sort of tied even if they want to go over it. They can get in trouble with bond issues. We've seen this. But in an enterprise district, basically the directors have to cut the spending because at the end of the year, as John mentioned, staff will come to you and say, oh, you spent $56 million. You must fund. You need $56 million worth of income basically to cover it. And so, therefore, I feel we have to cut costs. We have to do it in the personnel. We have to do it in other areas, any areas we can, equipment purchases and stuff. Instead of selling a truck at 80,000 miles, we have to look at 120,000 miles. I intend on setting up a citizens committee, and this is not just for political purposes, but I think it gives the directors more input if you have a citizens committee that makes suggestions, too, on savings. Citizens have a different concept of when you should buy new equipment and what your salary structure should be. And we need that input to the real world. If you talk to them, they'll talk about agency comparisons. I'm very anti-agency comparisons, unless they were willing to compare with the state of California. Now, that's when you find out that all managers, and Mark Robach's here, his manager makes about $150,000 more than the fellow that runs the water state of California water. Helix's probably makes about $50,000 more. $165,000 is what the Director of Water Resources State of California makes, and these other managers are making $200,000 to $225,000. And I do question that, okay, that the small district is more difficult to run than the state of California.
Okay, thank you. Lou Tejeda, let's hear from you.
First and foremost, what we need to do is look at the construction projects that Mr. Linden was referring to and audit those and see where the funds were expended to make sure that we got what we paid for. But in the bigger sphere of things, what you want to do in the winter months, when the wholesale water rates are much lower, we want to buy much more raw water and import it and push it into our lakes and reservoirs, so that then when the water rates are a little higher in the summer, we can draw those lakes down. That's one of the biggest areas of savings, and doing water transfers from one lake to another. The infrastructure is there. We just need to utilize it a little better. But that's one of the biggest areas where we can save a lot of money. And focusing to make sure that we get what we pay for. That El Monte project alone would have covered our budget for a couple of years.
Mark Racic, let's hear from you.
Thank you. Well, we've heard a lot of interesting points here about these rate increases, but one thing that I wanted to point out, everyone's running here for an elected position. Therefore, you're going to be doing the will of the people that are putting you there in office. And as I've been out listening and going to other groups and meetings, I keep hearing consistently, I keep hearing from everyone, it's almost the same message. We cut back, we saved a lot of water, and what happened? We got this rate increase. You don't have to have a PhD in economics or a master's in water engineering or something. You're being elected to represent the will of the people, and the people are upset, and they're frustrated out there. And that's why I'm running to represent the people. And if the people are telling me we need to do something to hold the line on these rate increases, that's what I'm going to do. And for those of you that may not know how the board is organized, the five board members give their marching orders, set policy for the general manager, Carlos Lugo, and he in turn implements and goes to his staff. We are the ones that are supposed to be setting the policy. We're not supposed to be sitting here just sitting back, waiting and listening for them to come and give us recommendations and then act upon them. So again, I'll say it again, we're running to represent the people. I'm running to represent Lemon Grove, part of La Mesa, and Spring Valley. And I'll do, when I'm out listening, I'll do what the people are asking me to do.
Okay, thank you very much. The next question has to do with water budgeting, which is a concept that is implemented in Padre Dam and some other water districts, whereby your water rates are allocated not just based on the fact that you have a water meter and there's three tiers, such as Helix does. It could be more tiers. Padre has five. And they actually take a look at things like lot size, household size, how many people are living there, how many pets and livestock you may have. So I would like to ask each of the candidates, do you support or not the concept of water budgeting for Helix ratepayers, and why or why not? I believe, Mr. Tejeda, it was your turn to lead off.
Water budgeting, I think, is an important facet to make sure that everybody understands, A, the value of the water, and B, where your water is going. Helix offers a program free of charge. I actually went out and did quite a few of those where we'd actually come out to someone's home and monitor their water use and see if there was any areas where we could help them conserve water, whether it was through landscape irrigation, making sure that they didn't have a sticking toilet, you know, any leaks. That's a project that's there, and it's available, and it's free of charge to the customers. So I would strongly suggest that you do that. That and the fact that the water budgets, for example, for parks and school districts, those are unique in that I still believe that residential customers should come first. And, you know, some of our larger users are commercial uses. Caltrans is a large user of that. We need to look at those guys and maybe scale back some of their usage so that there's more water available for everybody, not just the bigger consumers. First and foremost, we're a water district that provides water to the people, and that's what we need to focus on. Much like Mark was saying, that my reason for getting into this is so that I, too, can represent the constituents out there for the Helix Water District.
Mark Racic.
Thank you, Marion. You know, that's a really good idea. That's come up. I've heard about people talking about this water budgeting idea. And it kind of ties in a way with what Dan had suggested about a people's citizens committee to talk about setting rates and policy and getting more input from the people. And that's a really interesting idea because it's come up more than once. And I would certainly be in favor of looking at that and discussing that. And again, I'm running to represent the people. And if that's what the people are clamoring for, I'd be more than glad to work on that and support it as much as possible.
Well, very good. Thank you for that. John Linden, let's hear from you about water budgeting.
Yeah, well, I think the whole idea of what we're talking about here, the big picture, is the avenue of conservation. And the water rates are based on our cost of doing business. We're an $88 million operation. We've reduced our staff by 19. We have 149 employees. We have all these issues, but let me be very frank with you. What I tell you, you might not like to hear, but it's the way it is. Water rates are never going to drop back to where they were years ago. We have infrastructure problems, not problems, we have infrastructure we have to maintain. And going to the counting each person in a house, we're a huge agency. We're the 19th largest agency in the state of California. We've looked at that. Our costs would be more than what the savings would be. So it's not cost effective. We've also looked at smart meters. We're doing an experimental with about 500 customers, basically on a Helix, where it's hard to get to the water meter. But the bottom line is these costs are continuing. And as I said before, water is the oil of the 21st century. Worldwide, we've got issues, main issues. So we have to deal with those. But there again, when you turn the faucet on, we want you to get clear, clean water at the lowest rate. And that's exactly what we do, is setting policy. But we have a professional staff. We go to them and say, here's what we need to know. They come to us. There's no rubber stamp on this thing. We discuss it in detail. So we have to rely on those experts.
Okay, thank you very much. Dan McMillan, let's hear from you.
Marion, I think you're referring to the water budgeting that I introduced you in our first discussion. Basically, what we're saying is you look at each household. You have the tier system, and that's sort of a rough cut. If you use so much, you get a certain rate. If you use more, it's a little higher and a little higher. But under water budgeting, you actually look at the households, and one household may have two people in it, another 10. So you extend or you increase the amount of water in the different tiers depending on the size of the household. If you have a large area, you have a larger budget. And as far as size, it's not that difficult. Padre did it. They're about half the size of Helix, and it's not that difficult. You basically do it, and then you set up an appeals board because you are going to get people to come in and say, I don't have two people in my house. I have eight. And you look at it, and you adjust. But that way it makes it fair for those that are required to use more water. So that's what water budgeting is all about, and it makes it a little fair. And in defense, I do like the electronic metering. We implemented it at Padre. They got a great deal that was new at that time. But the fact is, the one thing that they're not implementing that I have been cursed by it at one or two times, and that is broken pipes. Well, these electronic meters can, they can sample every second, minute, 2 minutes, so they know when you have continuous flow. Well, if you have continuous flow for a day or two, it means you probably have a leak. Therefore, that you should get a call. Padre used to do that. Now they seem to do it after 30 days. You know, I'd assume they would do it quicker. But it's something to look at, and Helix can do it because it does conserve water. Because when you have continuous use, you notify the customer, and they may say, forget it. We've got a drip system, and it's going to run the whole time. Fine. But if you have continuous use for 24 hours and you didn't think you were doing anything, I forgot to turn that valve off. Thank you.
The next question is about the Lakeside El Monte Valley sand mine proposal that was alluded to earlier. Several years ago, the Helix Water Board sold land in Lakeside's El Monte Valley to a sand mine developer to meet the needs for sand for road projects in the region. The proposed sand mine, however, has drawn very strong opposition from residents in that area due to noise, air pollution, valley fever, you know, concerns over wildlife, horses, and on and on. The sand miner paid $1 million deposit to Helix, and there's a much larger balance due at the end of the year. So my question is, if that balance is not paid, the district has the right to have the property revert back to Helix. If the payment is not made, because maybe the project's not been approved at the county or whatever, would you consider extending that deadline for the developer, or do you believe that the property should revert back to Helix? Mark, I think it's your turn to lead off.
Thank you, Miriam. Well, that certainly is a very controversial issue here because, like I said, when I've been out listening to people, that's been brought up a number of times. And we've heard some interesting comments tonight from Lou and from Dan about that issue. There is a possibility, from what I understand, that the developer might default on this. And if the land does revert back to Helix Water, I just want to point out, Lou, Dan, and myself were not on the board when that decision was made years ago. But if this does come back here to the board at that time, hopefully, well, a couple things will be in place. One, Citizens Commission, so we can receive input from the people about what direction to move in about that. That's going to be very important because this is an issue. John made a point that, you know, Helix is not in the real estate business, but, you know, Helix has a staff of real estate people on there. So what we're going to do, what I would do is listen to the people that have elected me, listen to the Citizens Commission, take that input and make the best decision for my division.
Thank you. Mr. Linden, let's hear from you as the incumbent.
I don't think it's advisable to bring politics into the water business. We have five directors elected by the people. We spend numerous hours going over all these budgets. I'm also on the Water Authority, which is our wholesale water for San Diego County. This is not the time. It's fine and dandy if they want to come to the meetings, but believe me, we've got a staff. We've got a lot of experts in these areas. We're representing the public. We have no interest in not representing the public. This is a public service. So they could come in with their opinions, but I don't think we need a commission to take up the time without them having the background on how we're doing it and the state regulations that are involved in it. So let them come to the meetings. We're an open agency, and we got from the California Special Districts Association, we got an award at the state level as one of the most transparent agencies in the business. That's a huge award. You have to jump through hoops to get all the information to them. So I'm proud of that, and I'm proud of the district.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McMillan.
Yes, on the transparency, that was the October 7th meeting. There was some sensitivities that night that there was a two-hour report. There was 200 people there. It was warm, and the staff did get concerned about the yelling from the audience, and the audience looked somewhat like you, only it was a much larger audience, more people, and they did call the police. So we have to watch it when we talk about transparency. And the way you get awards in the water district, as you all know in many places, you fill out the application and make sure you check the right boxes. So I feel they do need more. They need a little more transparency. The mine, the sand, if the contract comes back to us, certainly I will talk to Lou, if nothing else. Lou has a lot of background on that. But as John points out, there are certain protocols and things you have to do. But I do have a ability and a proven record, actually, in this case. And I think the fellow that brought the offer to Padre Dam when they were moving, they were building a new office building, and they were about to sell the old one, and I think they got an offer, was $1.5 million, Mark, you brought them or something. And I pointed out to Roland Rossmiller at that time, this engineer, I was leaving the board, but, you know, you have to watch it because if your building doesn't get built on time, et cetera, you're going to have to pay rent, and what's it really worth and stuff. And they did keep it, and I think a couple of years later they sold it for about $7 million. So, you know, that was very advantageous for Padre. And as Mark and John and everybody have said, we're not just representing Lemon Grove, we're talking to you. We represent everybody. Even though I'm elected from one district, I represent Lemon Grove and all areas of the district.
Okay. Mr. Tejeda, let's hear from you on the Lakeside Sand Mine proposal.
I'm sorry, I don't think either one of these two gentlemen answered the question. I'm just going to cut right to the chase. Look, that's something that we need to take back if that opportunity presents itself. The entity that's running it right now, it was originally slated to be a golf course, which was never going to happen. Okay. They actually have already mined in excess of 500,000 cubic yards of sand out of there at a value of $10 to $15 a ton. They've already got in excess of $5 million in their pockets. They used our sand. That was our property. It was district, ratepayers' property. The down payment for that, the $1 million, came out of the stuff that they've already mined. Okay, so we're missing the boat here. I mean, they've got another $4 million in their pockets somewhere to still be able to pay for that. It would be insane not to take it back. I mean, especially when we know Sandag had identified that as a potential large deposit for construction-grade sand. And the board knew that at that time. They had those reports in the report that was given to them. And if they didn't have it, I brought it to their attention because I made a presentation against them selling that property. So in my opinion, it would be a no-brainer to take that property back. And once again, I would be taking the input of you guys, but I wouldn't be, unlike my esteemed colleague over here, I wouldn't be talking down to you. I'm going to listen to you. At the end of the day, my job is to represent you. Okay, and do what's in your best interest. But knowing it a little better, like Dan alluded to here, he's going to come to me. I don't need to go to anybody on it. I was actually on staff working on that project. So I know that project intimately. Okay, and I know what the value of that sand is. And in a nutshell, if the opportunity presents itself, it's a no-brainer. We'd have to take it back. When there's an asset there that's worth in excess of what I would believe to be in excess of $300 million, you got to take it back.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to move to our lightning round of questions that can be answered, I think, in a minute or less. Mr. Linden, let's start with you. The question is, would you support changing the Helix Water Board meeting times to evenings instead of 2 p.m., the current time, so that more working people could attend?
Yeah, let the board make that decision. I don't have a problem with that. When we have the later meetings, maybe six people come. It's very, very few people come. Frankly, we try to keep water issues as simple as possible. So I have to bring this up to the board all the time. Don't get complicated in this. The public just wants to know that they have clean water at reasonable rates and it comes out of the faucet. It's that simple. They want to know why the water rates go up. I think I've explained why. We have a huge infrastructure. Now, here's a good point. The Water Authority sued Metropolitan for overcharging us. We won $230 million plus some. It's under appeal. The board has already voted that should we get that money, we get about 7% of that money. We have agreed that that will go to drop the water rates because it was an overcharge in our water rates when it was done. So that's good news.
Mr. McMillan.
Agreed. And as John mentioned, the San Diego County Water Authority did sue. I was on the board at that time when we initiated that suit, and I voted and supported it and understood what MET was doing to us. So I certainly support that, and hopefully it gets resolved in the next few years.
The question was, would you support moving the meetings to the evenings?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mark Gracek and I have talked about that, and certainly Mark has work hours, too, and it's better to start at 5:30 or 6. And my suggestion would be that the board meetings start at a time certain, maybe at 6, and if there's any closed session, to do that ahead of time. So the board could come meet. If they have a two-hour closed session, do it, and then start the meeting at a convenient time. And if the public says, no, we want it at 6:15, then we do it at 6:15.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tejeda.
I think the more transparency we have, the more feedback we get from our constituents, the better off we are. So I'd be more than happy to look at what's in the best interest of our constituents. And if it's a later meeting, then that's what I would agree with.
Okay. And Mr. Gracek.
You know, Director Linden talked about transparency. And one of the things about transparency is access also. And having these meetings at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is a great disservice to all the working people in Lemon Grove, Spring Valley, throughout the whole district. I've already talked to two of the sitting board members that we have. One of the first things that I'm going to do is I'm going to bring forth a measure, a policy initiative, to go ahead and change those meeting times. Just like Dan had suggested, we'll do the closed session first, say 5:30, then we move to 6 p.m. for the open session for the public. That's transparency. That's access for your elected officials. Thank you.
Okay. Another rapid round question here. A couple years ago, the board considered closing the Lake Jennings campground. As of now, it's still open. They've been working through a committee to try to make it profitable, or at least not losing money. And there's been progress made, but my question is, how committed are you to keeping the Lake Jennings campground open for the public? Mr. McMillan.
I am committed. I'm glad to see that Joel Scalzetti and John London were a subcommittee that got together. They figured out how to cut some costs and how to increase revenues. They're doing some clever things there now. Joel was very strongly in favor of that. I think he only had 2 votes at the time, but the board wisely, I felt, gave him some leeway, and he and John worked out some things, and now it is breaking even or profitable. Yes, we're not a recreation district. We're a water district. But they have to look at that in other endeavors they do, too. If you're going to look at the lake, you have the water garden and other places that they support, and you need to look at that as far as what are you really trying to do. And I think what most people want us to do is deliver water to their faucet when they turn it on at a reasonable price. Maybe the best district around and everything, that's fine, but they're still looking for a reasonable price. And if you drive down Madison or 2nd or any of those streets, you'll see many brown lawns, and I would like to see it green again.
Mr. Tejeda.
I, too, support the keeping the campground open. I think it's twofold. Number one, it's positive for the community. But more importantly, if it's not open and we're not realizing some revenue for it, then we'll have to pay for security because that's a watershed right. And with the stuff going on with national security right now, you know, the more sets of eyes you have up there, the better off you are. So I definitely support that for both benefits. Like I said, if it's a break even, then it's a win for us. That way we don't have to worry about someone, you know, tainting our water, heaven forbid.
Okay, Mr. Gracie.
Thank you. I'll get right to the point, Miriam. I strongly support keeping that open. You know, when our kids were younger, we did a lot of camping, a lot of outdoor activities and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and that's a great asset for the community. And I fully support that. And if I'm on the board, I'll work hard to go ahead and behind the scenes and make sure that's profitable and makes sense.
Okay, Mr. Linden.
Yeah, then what happened when Lake Jennings, our reservoir, was being built, the state of California said, you must have a campground for 40 years. So at the end of 40 years, we let the city or the county run it for a while, and they didn't maintain it. We took it back. We were looking at our budget. We're all talking about low water rates. Well, we were spending $300,000 a year or more to keep it open, and only 1% of our customers, less than 1%, were using it. So now we have everybody coming from every place else, and is it really the thing to keep open? So in discussing this, I am strongly for keeping it open, and now it's kind of almost breaking even. We got teepees. We got
teepees, canoes, lots of things.
Yeah, teepees. Yeah. The Kyra out there is doing a fantastic job.
Okay. The next question is one that was sent to us by email. Helix has a complex budget, and so certainly financial management skills are important. In the last 10 years, have any of you had major financial issues, such as a bankruptcy or foreclosure or tax liens? Mr. Tejeda, it would be your turn.
I don't have any financial issues right now. I mean, I'm a retired employee from the district. My wife and I live comfortably, So I don't have any issues with that. And as far as the financing or understanding the financing, like I mentioned earlier, I was actually preparing the quarterly board reports for the board of directors, so I was intimately involved with those.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gracek.
My wife and I have neither bankruptcy or foreclosure or a tax lien.
Okay. Mr. Linden.
Yeah, no, I have no financial problems, and my business is profitable. I deal with a lot of commercial companies, and none of them are run more efficiently than Helix Water District.
All right, thank you. And Mr. McMillan.
Yes, I have certainly many financial dealings. At one time, I was a contractor, and about 8 years ago, I owned many houses and some raw land. And the company, some of those debts went bad, and yes, I did BK those and got rid of them, cleared them up. We've done very well since. I think this question was meant for me. There is a foreclosure on one of my properties, but that is in agreement with the Bank of America. I sued them successfully after 6.5 years on a large suit, and at this time we came to a settlement. They paid me, and the second lien holder would not relinquish their position or cooperate in our settlement. So therefore, we had we went through a friendly foreclosure, and I've done those. But I think that's all good experience. You learn from those things. But as far as finance, I do have an MBA, and I've been practicing finance for 30 years, so I'm very well versed in it.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. The state recently raised some concerns about levels of mercury in some of the fish caught in Lake Jennings. To be clear, not the quality of the water itself. The mercury tests below the threshold in the water itself, it's safe to drink. But when larger fish eat smaller fish, even the minute amounts of mercury get concentrated. And so there were concerns raised about the safety of eating large fish consumed at the lake. How concerned are you about this issue, and do you have any ideas for addressing it? Mark Rasick, it's your turn.
Well, Miriam, thanks for bringing that up. That's an interesting question, and I'm not that well versed on that, so I'll have to go back and Director Linden has talked about the staff that we have there. Well, I'd want to make sure that we protect the public and our ratepayers and the people that use Lake Jennings. So I would be in favor of studying that matter further and to try to get to the bottom of it.
Thank you. Mr. Linden.
Miriam, as you mentioned, it doesn't affect the water at all. Our fish that we put in there come from hatcheries, and the level in that fish is very low. So that's not even a concern at ours. But our staff has looked at it. The fisheries and so forth are analyzing it and so forth, but it has nothing to do with us as far as what we're delivering to you.
Mr. McMillan.
Yes, as John said, the hatcheries deliver most of the fish to many of these places, to Padre and to Helix. I would put up a sign, everybody does, you can't go into a gas station without seeing all of the problems you may have if you pump gas. And certainly there needs to be some warning. And the staff has to be aware of these possibilities. The water is tested daily. It's not in the water, but if there is a problem there, the staff should be aware of it and bring it to the board. But again, the public should be made aware of it via signs at this time, I think.
Thank you. Mr. Tejeda.
I would agree with both of the gentlemen here that there needs to be some signage up, and anybody that's consuming the fish there needs to be warned of that. And like Mr. Linden said, a lot of those fish are imported. They do buy from hatcheries, but I would like to know which ones of the fish they were finding the highest concentration, because there are a lot of fish that are naturally born in there, the bass, the bluegill, all the shad, and some of the other fish, and the catfish. Those are planted, but some of those catfish have been in there for years, but the trout are definitely planted regularly. That's what I would identify as which one is the source.
Okay.
And if it's the trout or the catfish that they're planting, then we can go back to the hatcheries and identify those. But I think we need to figure out what the problem is and where it's at before we really tackle it.
I would just like to ask the open-ended question of if anybody else here has any specific other concern about water quality, whether it might be chlorine in the water or anything else. I believe it was your turn to lead off, Mr. Lipton.
We upgraded our treatment plant, I think it was back in 99, 2000, around there. Went to ozonation, state-of-the-art as far as water treatment. And then we brought the Water Authority in to buy 10% into it so that we get the economy of scale with the volume of water we put through there. So we've got a great working relationship with the County Water Authority, as I said earlier, which is our wholesaler. We've spent at the Water Authority $2.7 billion in the last few years upgrading everything within the district, because we have to get off imported water. In 91, we were getting 95% of the water from Metropolitan. Today, we're getting in round figures maybe 60%. So we're on that track.
Okay. Mr. McMillan.
The quality of the water is excellent. It's better than the bottled water my wife buys at the store. She doesn't believe me, but remember, it's tested continuously. Every so often you'll have a problem, but the store water is not tested. So the quality is regularly tested. If there's a problem, it's taken care of right then. On the other thing, the infrastructure that John said, yes, we put massive amounts of money, billions, into infrastructure. Part of that is so that we can move water from one reservoir to another and move it north. It's easy for it to flow south by gravity, but when you want it to go north, if you have it stored down south and you need to take it north, it gets expensive. But the water quality, again, the local water districts do a great job at testing. And every so often, you will get a lot of calls at your home office saying, those guys are running water down the drain, and why are they wasting it when we're in the middle of a drought? That's because they're cleaning that pipe or something like that. And they, okay. when they chlorinate them, they must dump that water.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tejeda, what are your views on the water quality?
Well, you know, as a former employee, I was intimately involved with a lot of that when I was in the field. I think the water quality is excellent. It's one of the better agencies in the state. Like Mr. Linden alluded to earlier, our frontline employees with that district are excellent. We've got the very well-respected staff in the lab in there. A lot of the other agencies bring their water samples to Helix to have them tested. So the only concern I would have would be potentially with the issues of fluoride. And there's been some concerns out there with that they've been adding fluoride into the water. That would be my concern, the only concern. But as far as the quality of water goes, the staff there is very diligent to making sure that the best quality water goes out into the system. And it's routinely tested.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Grayson.
Like it was alluded to, staff does do these inspections quite often. The water's tested, and it's very good water. It's excellent quality of water. The district publishes this report that all the ratepayers get, and you can read for it in yourself, and you'll see water quality is excellent. There's always some issues that come up. I work in the Water Department of Public Works at Miramar. Same thing. There's some issues that come up, but the frontline people working out there in the field every day work very hard to make sure that we have good, safe water.
Okay, well, it's good to hear one question everybody agrees on. We have good quality water in the district. The next question is from the audience. The Lakeside Water District has the lowest rates in the county. They also have a cost structure that is 60% of other agencies. Shouldn't that be your target? Mr. McMillan, it's your turn to go first.
That's a great target. I don't think you can get there. And I've certainly owned property in the Lakeside District, and I don't want to pick on them too bad, but I broke a water pipe once there when we were doing some construction. And my side of the meter was frozen, and I couldn't turn the valve, and I couldn't turn the valve on the other side either because it was frozen. But fortunately, I found a Lakeside maintenance crew and got them over there. I did not go through the office to delay. We had water running all over. So they do things more efficiently, but long-term, I think their infrastructure suffers. And it's not just there. All of them, even in the opening remarks, it was mentioned, we delayed infrastructure improvement. I'm very anti that. I'm pro looking at what your depreciation schedule should be and maintaining your infrastructure. The way these districts get around cost problems is to delay maintenance. And then what do they do to you? They come back and say, could we have a bond issue? We need to maintain our schools and our infrastructure.
Okay. Mr. Tejeda.
Well, interestingly, the way Helix is set up is different from Lakeside. Lakeside has some well water that they draw from. They do buy water from Helix as well as other agencies. But like both gentlemen here alluded to, they're kind of playing with a loaded gun there, if you will. If you don't maintain your distribution system, much like the city of San Diego does, they're paying more in damage costs than what Helix does in just their maintenance. If you stay on top of the maintenance, it costs a little bit more, but in the long run, it's much more efficient. That's the one thing with Lakeside is they're going to wind up getting caught later because they're not maintaining their system the way they should be. They've got a lot of aging pipes, and when that stuff breaks, you know, it causes damage. Now they've got to go out under an emergency contract and have that repaired. But even worse than that is the damage that it causes to the adjoining property owners. That's where you really get hit. City okay. of San Diego has encountered that on numerous occasions. So comparing those two, it's kind of, you're not comparing apples to apples there. It's apples to oranges. So they're two different agencies.
Thank you for that perspective. Mr. Grayson.
Yeah, I agree there with what Lou is saying. It's kind of comparing two different agencies. It's a much smaller area versus Helix Water District, different type of customer. And they have their own supply there with some of the wells they do. So it's not quite an accurate comparison. But it is admirable that they've held their rates down so low. But it's a whole different situation out there.
Okay, and Mr. Linden.
Yeah, you have to be a jack of all trades at Lakeside because it's small. We provide them water, and I think in the future we'll be providing them a lot more because those wells is their main source of water. So their rates are clearly the lowest in San Diego County, probably the lowest in California. But we're hooked up so that when they need it, we're there to help.
Very briefly, can each of you tell us which endorsements you have that you're most proud of and would like to share with our audience? Mr. Tejeda.
I'm a little unusual in that I'm not looking for endorsements because I don't want to be beholden to anybody. I'd rather earn what I've got coming to me on my own. But I have worked because I do work closely with the city of El Cajon and their city council down there, the school district. Diane Jacobs' office and Duncan Hunter's office on some projects that we've done jointly. I know that they would support me. I didn't ask for their endorsements. I was hoping to stand on my own with that without looking for endorsements from anybody.
Okay. And Mr. Grasek?
I've been endorsed by both sides of the aisle. I've been endorsed by Republicans and Democrats. And this is a nonpartisan situation here that we're running for. I've been endorsed by Diane Jacob, by County Supervisor Diane Jacob. I've been endorsed by all five members of the Lemon Grove School Board here in Lemon Grove, being a resident. I've been endorsed by two members of the Lemon Grove City Council. And one of the most important endorsements is from the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association.
Okay, very good. And Mr. Linden?
I'm endorsed by the Republican Party of San Diego, Joel Anderson, Brian Jones, Mark A., Mayor of La Mesa, and a couple of our board members. Doug Wilson is president of the Padre Dam Water District, Gary Croucher and Mark Roback of Otay.
Okay, Mr. McMillan.
I sort of go along with the philosophy of Lou and Donald Trump on those things, but again, I do have some endorsements, certainly from some Republican, Joel Scalzetti, two of the board members of Helix have endorsed me, some from Padre, and the primary one, oh, and Democrats and Republicans, the Democratic Party has endorsed us, and we'll be doing flyers. They want to see those rates down a little bit, too. And the most important one, though, I think the meaningful one, is the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement District. They represent 7,000 homeowners, and those homeowners are irritated. And they were probably the reason that we had the October 7th turnout is they pointed out to the about the raises and the rate and the idea that they were going to use Prop 218, which is a proposition, which means the people voted on it. And the idea was that thou must go in front of the people. Well, when you go out 5 years, you're not really going in front of them every year. You certainly can. As John said, they will look at it each year, but you're tied, you're giving yourself a lot of room there.
Do you have any new initiatives to benefit consumers that you would bring to the table? I should say ratepayers, that you would bring to the table. Mr. Grayson.
Thanks, Miriam. Well, one of the points that we talked about earlier when we talked about transparency is I'm really big on the fact of changing the meeting time on that Wednesdays from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to the evenings. Every elected body here in this area, school districts, city councils, meet in the evenings. And there's a reason for that, because you want to be able to represent the people. So with the support of the board members, Kathleen Hedberg and Joel Scalzetti and Dan, and depending how the election goes in Division 1, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to move forward to change that.
Thank you. Mr. Linden, how about you?
I think the long-term, we've got to remember that water is a long-term process. We look out 50 to 100 years. That's what our forefathers did. That's why at San Vicente Dam in 1942 during the war, when they built San Vicente, they built the foundation to where we could raise it in the future. That's what made it practical to do for us to do now. That's forward thinking. Out 50 to 100 years. That's the way we deal with it in the water business, and I think that's important for everybody to understand.
Thank you very much. Mr. McMillan.
John mentioned San Vicente. Yes, that was a long-term project, and on the County Water Authority, I did vote, and I was in favor of that. In fact, I went further. If they wanted to go a little higher, Padre at that time didn't have a lot of local storage, but they made it high enough so that we get away from each district having to have as much local storage. But the two initiatives would certainly change the meeting time to a time certain in the evening. And second of all, the Citizens Committee. That's not political rhetoric. I think that you're going to have change, change causes conflict, and conflict causes change. And we've had some conflict there, and that's going to force some change, we hope. But at the same time, you need that Citizens Committee to make sure those issues get pushed all the way through and give support to the directors that are trying to make those changes.
Very good. Thank you. And Mr. Tejeda.
I would agree with the other two gentlemen over here. Changing the meeting times would be one of the positives for the district, but also making sure that there's transparency and making a good accounting of the construction projects out there. Like I mentioned earlier, there was quite a bit of funds that were expended on stuff that the district didn't receive. They paid for example, for pipe that was never installed. They paid double for some laterals on a project. That's the kind of stuff that needs to be brought to the forefront. We need to get what we pay for. And we certainly don't need to pay for something that we didn't receive. So transparency, internal transparency, and making sure that those projects are audited correctly.
Thank you very much. We are going to move on to closing statements. Each candidate will have 1 minute to wrap it up and tell you why they think they deserve your vote. Let's start with Mr. Linden.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm very proud of the agency and the job that the directors do on the agency. I think one important thing to remember is we're looking now at possibly bringing a bond issue up to cover some of our capital expenditures to try to keep our rates low. What's important to understand is the rating companies look to the board, and if they're not taking the proper rate increases, then the rating goes down and we pay more for the bonds. So it's important that we maintain the structure, because if we go out for bonds, we're not going to have a double A rating if we're not keeping the rates where they should be. So that's most important.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. McMillan, let's hear your closing statement.
Yes, like I say, I've been in business for 40 years. I worked for the defense industry for about 6 years prior to that. Again, I've had many projects, probably 30 or 40 different projects. Some did fantastically well, 100% return for many years. Some did horrible. I learned a lot from those that went horrible also. The ones that go good, you don't learn as much from, because you just think, you know what you're doing. But you learn, and so I've learned. Again, I do have a contractor's license. I have a real estate license. I am an enrolled agent, which means I can practice in front of the IRS. These things, and finance is such a big thing. Everybody's brought it up, and that's where the costs come from. And we have to look at bond issues. I think Helix is now looking at them, and that's the way to go. We have to do more bond issue and not pay as you go. And Helix in the past has made errors, and I would even point them out when I was president of the Padre or something like that thing. For many years, they didn't have capacity fees. People just, as a contractor, I could build and not have to pay for the meter. I feel they have capacity fees now, but those things have to be modernized, and Helix has to look ahead and not make those errors in the future.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tejeda.
I'm glad Mr. Linden brought up the issue with the bonds. The bonds aren't needed if you just simply take back the property in El Monte and bring in a partner to do the sand mining down there. That'll take care of our rates for several years. You know, the mistakes that they made and the way they were hoodwinked by some of the staff members, that stuff has to come to the forefront. You know, we're paying for stuff right now that we shouldn't be paying for. We're not getting our money's worth right now. And that's one of the things that I'd like to bring forward. I know the industry. I was with the agency for 28 and a half years, so I know the inner workings of it. I understand what's factual and what's not factual. But more importantly, I'm a customer, and I've been frustrated for years. Even though I was an employee, I was still frustrated. We're doing a good job there. The frontline employees are great employees, but I think we can do it better. We can do it more efficiently because I bring a unique expertise to it. And the other thing is, I've never held an elected position. I'm not a career politician like Mr. McMillan. Or been with the district like Mr. Linden. But I would just appreciate you guys' support, because at the end of the day, I'll be there for you, not for me.
All right. Thank you very much. And Mr. Graysick, we'll let you have the final say.
Thank you, Miriam. Friends, neighbors, ratepayers, thanks for coming out tonight. You know, there's a lot of issues on the ballot this year, but sometimes the most important issues are the ones that hit you right in your wallet and in your household budget. And this is one of these issues here, because we have two incumbents that are running that have consistently voted with staff and upper management for these rate increases consistently over the years. And you have myself as a candidate, and I'm running on a platform here for lower rates, because I'm a ratepayer, just like everyone else here in this audience. I'm running to hold the line on these rate increases, increase transparency, open up the process here, the political process, by changing the meetings. And I'd appreciate your support this fall. Thank you very much.
I really want to give a big thanks to all four of the candidates who came out tonight. I think it's really special when candidates are willing to meet face-to-face with the voters and answer questions like this. So thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.